W. Washington.
The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposed ideas in the mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. One should, for example, be able to see that things are hopeless and yet be determined to make them otherwise. F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Good evening, and welcome to another edition of Dialogue.
You're darn right, hopeless, but determined to make them otherwise, just like F. Scott Fitzgerald said. Hey, Terry Kester here. It's Dialogue, the Raucous Caucus, with
Garland Nixon.
And with
Mark Levine.
All right. Good to see you guys. Happy New Year to
happy
you, gentlemen.
Happy New Year to you both. Happy New Decade.
Yeah,
that's
happy
right.
New
it's
Decade.
All wonderful.
Happy New
Glad to have the Bush Decade behind us in our
sure. Yeah. Happy New Year to all of our listeners and callers, too, and we look forward to talking to you later tonight. Actually, pretty soon tonight. Pretty soon. Well, since it's, you know, the new year and we're all happy, we're going to talk about some real depressing stuff just for the hell of it.
It's your week, Terry. Would we expect anything?
Why should we be happy for too long? It's right. Terry's show tonight.
Right. Yeah, right. You know, it's 2010. It's downhill. Trust me, guys. You know. Oh, I hope not. I hope not. Even in the midst of hopelessness, as F. Scott Fitzgerald says, we are determined. But the fact is we're in trouble. We're in deep trouble, guys. And we got
right here in River City.
Here in River City, and we got to figure out what the heck to do about it. Not that I don't know what the heck we can citizens can do about it, but that's one of the things I want to discuss. I just want to run down a few basically facts here.
I know what we can do. We can watch suspicious people on planes and jump on them.
I've been doing that anyway. I don't know what you've been doing when you fly, but some of those women aren't that suspicious.
We can detain Joan Rivers.
You're going to get in trouble for that for the wrong people.
You heard about Joan Rivers, right?
No, what happened?
Joan Rivers got detained from a plane. They wouldn't let her go when they said she was suspicious because her passport said, Joan Rosenberg, a.k.a. Rivers, because of her husband's foreman. And they wouldn't let her go on. They said she was suspicious.
Oh, she was just causing trouble because nobody would jump on her.
No, what I think happened is all that plastic surgery. It kind of rang the bells. She had so many foreign substances in her that they thought she was carrying some kind of, you know. You have Botox. It's a poison, right? Anyway, go ahead.
Joan Rivers, a poison, yes. Anyway.
We digress.
We love you, Joan. We love you. We're sorry you can't be with us tonight. Okay, guys. I'm putting it in perspective quickly here while we have some fun and while we quirk. Quirk? I'm not sure that's what I meant. Anyway, we are an empire. We'll give ourselves that, right? We are ruled by a military-industrial congressional complex. We'll get ourselves that, right?
We are speak for yourself.
Oh, trust Mr. Eisenhower. You know that he had that in that phrase. He had that in his aide's persuasion.
I did not know that. Congressional is part of it?
Yes.
And I did not know.
His aide said, no, you got to take that out, Ike. You got to take that out. But if you ever get a chance to see that replayed again on any television or anything else, it is phenomenal. He is so dead serious in his warning. It's incredible. I mean, he's really cutting to the chase on it. Oh, I wish Ike were here. Anyway, we are also ruled by corporate nations. Most of us agree with that. The headquarters are right here in D.C. As you see that Northrop Grumman is moving here now to join Lockheed, who's already here, General Dynamics, who's already here. General Dynamics, by the way, is building 140 super tanks for Iraq.
Hey, well, you know what?
Is that good or what?
The lion always stays close to the herd, so he can keep picking off victims. Yeah.
That's right.
Let's give those Iraqis lots of good tanks. I mean, you know, I'm all in favor of that. Why not? Anyway.
I thought they were like tankers, like to carry the oil. I didn't realize.
No, like M1 tanks with night vision and everything else.
Yeah. I don't want to bet we're buying them in some twisted kind
I'm
of
I'm sure we're buying them.
No, we're actually building them right here in the United States of America. As a matter of fact, jobs.
Yeah.
Part
of
Obama's job program,
with
I guess.
With our money, I guess.
And to quote the CEO of Northrop Grumman, when he's coming here, he just says, everybody understands that business is now getting done in Washington, D.C., not in New York City. And we have secret prisons, secret thugs, paid mercenaries, and we still torture.
What else is new?
Not much.
Okay.
But we are, because of all of this, or maybe not because of all that, and that's part of our discussion, we are, as all empires are, under attack, guys, in case you haven't noticed.
Few empires are not.
That's right. That's right. And we probably will be under attack until the empire crumbles or significantly lessens its grip or its presence or something. I mean, it's not going to go away. Right now, whether you realize it or not, we are at war in Somalia, Yemen, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and surrounding neighborhoods. And if you look at a map, I mean, that's astounding. If you just get out a world map and look from Somalia across to Yemen, you know, through Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. I mean, that's an incredible stretch of land with, of course, a lot of resources.
But, Terry, it can grow. I mean, there's still Sudan. There's a bunch of places.
Right.
Well, why restrict it to just those five or six countries?
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, wait a minute. Nigeria has oil. Don't leave them out.
Well, they don't quite connect on the map. But
they got oil.
Maybe they don't have to connect.
They could
build a bridge.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. But anyway, we're at war in all those nations. Our allies are also at war or under attack from Britain, Spain, NATO, etc. Indirect allies are also under attack, Indonesia, Jordan. And in case you didn't know it, we are also basically at war in the pending narco states, including, of course, Afghanistan, including in South America, Colombia, Venezuela, all of Central America, Mexico, and the narcos.
But Canada is very peaceful, Terry.
I'm
going
there.
Why are you only looking at the bad news?
Yeah. Hey, what about Eritrea? Huh? Did you ever think about Eritrea?
And our own perpetual or becoming narco cities, the United States, Los Angeles, and Chicago. Okay, that's the good news.
Has anyone wondered why people get so depressed? I think after Terry does a show, Garland, each time someone jumps off a bridge somewhere.
They probably do. They probably do. But I have some medication if they want to meet me outside the station I can help them with.
The bars love it because drinking goes up.
That's true. Yeah. All across the city.
You better believe
it. Straight shots of scotch.
Seriously, gentlemen. You know, it's tough. I mean, that's all I'm trying to point out. I mean, we really are between a rock and a rock and a hard place. It's tough. I mean, it is a tough situation to be in. And, you know, therefore, what I'm really trying to say, despite our fun here and despite the bad facts, is, you know, what the heck are we going to do about it? As a nation, as policy, as individuals, you know, we have to make individually a lot of decisions on how much of our privacy we're going to give up. You know, we have to make a lot of decisions, obviously, in terms of policy. The money is just flowing for these wars. I don't know if you heard it or know it, but, you know, immediately after the guy was identified coming from Yemen, boom, we got another aircraft carrier outside of Yemen and a couple of cruisers as well. I mean, we got our Navy over the whole darn world, and it's obviously economically impossible to sustain, and this is what usually happens to empires. They spend all their money protecting their interest with their military, and the costs go up, and their economy tanks. Interestingly enough, just saw a headline today on that in relation to the economy, because everything ties into this. China is now not just, you know, buying up our debt, but they are becoming the leading lending nation. I mean, they are literally taking away our economic place in the world, you know, just dollar by dollar.
They're not taking it away. We're handing
it. Well, there is that, yes.
We're handing it away. Yes. We're
both can be true. Both can be true.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, my question to you guys to start with, and then to, you know, to our listeners, I mean, it's a tough situation. I don't know if there's a – I'm bringing all this up because, guys, this is going to shock you. This is probably going to hurt you. I hope it doesn't disappoint you, and I hope you don't take it personal. But I don't have the answer.
Well, Terry, wait a minute.
It's the first time you've ever said that, Terry.
Terry. I know.
Terry usually has all the answers.
No, Terry, when all else fails, take to the streets.
Yeah, you go to
the streets.
Yeah, yeah. I understand that the streets of Yemen want you.
Thank you, Garland. Garland, I love you. Yeah, no, I do have the answers.
That's right. You got the answer, man.
The question is which street?
Yeah, which street?
I mean, how about the capital of Yemen? They'd be glad to have you.
Why not? Sure.
They just open the whatever.
Anyway. Okay. Well, other than that, and I'm not sure that would do anything to stop terrorism or the war on terror or whatever we're going to call
it. Yeah, but it's good for our cardiovascular system.
It is. All right. So Garland, since you jumped right in there and helped us out right from the beginning, you know, there you are. There's the problem. What do we do, Garland?
Well, you know, one thing, just one comment on there, and that is, as soon as you said this some guy's going to have an underwear bomb or whatever it is from Yemen, and we send an aircraft carrier off the coast of Yemen.
Don't you know that aircraft carriers can destroy underwear, Garland?
Yeah,
it's very clear.
I never understood that.
I mean, you put underwear in front of those guns,
in front of
it'll be destroyed. Yeah. So what's the problem?
Yeah, radar scope in front of night vision. You can always see
underwear.
There is
no way that jockey shorts are going to last.
That's right.
I never understood that. I never understood why, like, a bunch of guys attacked the U.S. with box cutters, and we spent like $100 trillion on high-tech weapons. Are they going to develop an anti-box cutter missile or something?
Because
I never understood.
We can.
But there are military-industrial complex individuals who, anything that happens that could remotely be interpreted as a threat to the United States means we have to fly some F-16s and fire some Tomahawks at someone.
There's a reason why Dick Cheney wants to call it the war on terror, and President Obama does not. It is, of course, not a war on terror. It is a war on a very specific ideology that has declared war on us. And as soon as we understand that this is a mental game more than an arms game, that this is all about people's hearts and minds, this is all about encouraging the Muslim world to go towards their majority moderate elements rather than their minority extremist elements, until we understand that it's about ideas and not about military might, we can never win this war.
But we've been asked, Mark, we've been asking for that to happen, you know, in the Muslim world for like 8 years.
Decades before September 11th.
Yeah, I mean, and we haven't seen much indication of that.
No, because look, we need oil. At least until we find alternatives that we're not.
No,
finding.
I mean, it gives a lot of money.
Look,
I mean your comment about the Muslim world.
There have always been failed states throughout human history for millennia. Yeah. There have always been states that are anarchic or falling apart. Places like Somalia and Yemen, where there is a government but they're in no real control. Mm. And you know, at that time, 99% of the time in history, a lot of people die, but it's in that country. They kill each other and maybe some of their neighbors.
That's the good news.
But we're not in that world anymore. Today, these people can come out and start to kill us and kill others and kill allies and, frankly, kill hope. Because if, to me, the whole heart of what's going on in Afghanistan is not that the Taliban is loved by the Afghanis. I don't think it is. But that it kills the hope of anything else, and it gives them a kind of security, really like the feudal days. Yeah. When people would turn to the strongest power, and not because they like the strongest power.
And you've hit on a key thing.
That's why warlords work. That's because right. They can provide some security in your village.
You've hit on a key thing there, and that is security. And you know, even in our Constitution, I mean, like the first thing, you know, the first sentence in the constitutional instructions of Congress, you know, is the security of the nation, and the same for the President of the United States. That's number one. That's before common welfare or anything else.
Provide for the common defense.
Provide for the common defense.
Then comes promote the general welfare.
Right. And so, you know, if the Taliban provides security, heck, they'll go with the Taliban. But I want to challenge one other point, and that is, you know, you say it's just a matter of the mind, and I don't think that's quite true from what we're seeing, because you do have Al-Qaeda. You know, and granted the links are weak, but you still have links. You have Al-Qaeda in every one of these countries going all the way across. And they are, if not acting under one leadership, which they're certainly not, but they are.
Al-Qaeda is an ideology more than it is individuals, I think.
That's hard to say to the people in what's the capital of Pakistan?
Karachi.
Yeah.
Islamabad's largest city.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
You know, they just had this, you know, huge bomb go up in the middle of a funeral procession.
But did you notice when the bomb went off, and there was also another huge bomb in a mosque, that occurred just a couple weeks ago, that there was really very little outcry in the Muslim world? I was very disappointed by that. Because when a Danish cartoonist stupidly mocks the Prophet Muhammad, which I'm not defending, you know, you see millions of people march in the streets.
Too,
but compare that to killing dozens of innocent people in a mosque, and you see no marches at all. And until these people in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Somalia and care more about their own country than we care about their country.
Well, but if they haven't
let me throw in
a little bit of a different angle too.
Go ahead.
There's another part of it here.
Not into the streets yet, though.
No. Okay. Oh darn! I was hoping to take to the streets, but okay, we'll do that at 8 o'clock. We're out. We'll all run out and take to the streets. It's a little cold.
Okay.
We'll drive to the streets.
Can we wait till summer to take to the streets?
You know, we'll see. Yeah. But at any rate, what I'm saying is this too. By the same token, we have to look at our policies and how they affect things. Because when you look in the Muslim world, okay, you have the Osama bin Ladens, and then you have the overwhelming most of the people are peaceful. Then you have this small little, let's face it, we've got the Republican Party. but you get my point. At any rate, when we do things like, attack Iraq, and they look and they see, you know, that some American soldier raped a 14-year-old girl and murdered her whole family, they see us bombing and destroying a whole Muslim country, it's not going to help bring people towards us.
You don't think so.
So what happens is we, in our policies, do things that make people angry at us, and we make it a lot easier for people to say, well, you know, I may not necessarily like Osama bin Laden and his ideology, but I hate those guys. So if he's fighting those guys, then he's all right with me, because I just turned on the news last night and I just watched Americans flatten, you know, three city blocks in Baghdad.
Sure,
so we screwed ourselves
over. There's propaganda too, but the irony is that when we leave them alone to some extent, that's when they often turn against Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda, I remember, had this huge bombing in Jordan, and I think it was a wedding ceremony.
Right.
Killed dozens of people. People got upset.
That doesn't exactly work either, because basically, rightly or wrongly, and we blame ourselves for it, or other people blame us for it, we left, quote, Afghanistan alone after they drove the Russians
when
out,
I say leave it
and
alone,
the Taliban just came right in.
When I say leave it alone, I mean, I thought the Pakistanis, and again, I don't know if they did this purposely or by accident, but I don't know whether they're so brilliant Or just got lucky. But when they left that Swat Valley to the Taliban and said, all right, you want a little power in Pakistan? We'll give you the Swat Valley. And they marched mistreating people and mistreating women.
Right, and
then they start marching toward Islamabad. And suddenly the Pakistani nation, which really didn't give much care about this little valley, suddenly, oh, wow, these really are dangerous people. And now the majority of Pakistanis are very clear to the threat and want to fight it. The irony is, if you could show the people there who the Al-Qaeda is, you can often round up popular support against them. It's a propaganda war as much as it is a military war.
It is, and that ties right into my next point, which is, you know, there is no question that a vast number of people, and certainly a lot of people within the Muslim religion and abroad, I'm talking, not talking about American Muslims, but I'm talking about in countries like Yemen, in countries in Yemen where the, if in case you didn't happen to catch it, 42% of the people earn less than $2 a day, you know, and obviously cannot live on less than $2 a day. Mm-hmm. The economic, and if you just happen to see the newspaper today, of course, in Dubai, they've just put up that new building.
Highest building in the world.
Burj Khalifa.
But Dubai is not that far from Yemen. What I don't understand is why they can't help them. Why the people of Dubai, who have so much money, they make man-made islands, and they have a skiing
building
indoors.
This building is twice as high as the Empire State Building.
Kind of like us in Mexico.
Yeah, okay, but I mean,
well,
but
us in Mexico. Fair point. Why can't we help Mexico?
But what you guys are pointing out is exactly what I think a large part of the problem is. You have this growing, massive international economic inequality.
Right.
And you are creating, or we are creating, or the economic powers that be are creating this incredible anger. Because the people in countries all across this area we're talking about, the people there are suffering.
And you know what?
And they've got to take out their anger somewhere. And if some guy comes along and says, hey, the bad guy here is the richest guy in town, they're going to tend to believe that.
Well, not only that, but they're going to tend to blame the United States.
Well,
rather than Dubai, because people in Dubai share their religion and share their culture and their language, and we don't.
And let's face it, these people very well know history, and the history was what happened. The Western Europe went to Africa and, you know, overthrew countries, took them over, and stole all their resources, and the people got nothing. And right now, they see America living high on the hog off of what? Resources from we're burning oil from the Middle East, we're living high on the hog, and a lot of people there are not living well. So
okay.
I think ultimately, you know, when you look back, this is the pattern that history has given us. Maybe we better get the phone number out.
But I want us to get back, because I want to challenge you guys. You know, I mean, okay, so everything we've said, I don't think there's any disagreement between us anyway, you know, on that. But what is the answer? I mean, the simple thing of saying change the policy, I mean, that sounds good.
Well, I think,
but
we better give out the number. You know, we got to get the answer over the phone.
Somebody better have it out there.
202-588-0893.
202-588-0893. Oh, boy.
What, this is like a barbershop quartet.
You can't count, can you?
There's only three of us.
Okay, trifecta, tet or something. I don't know.
Think it's called the barbershop trifecta.
But the potential. The potential is there. Let's face it, guys.
Well, with the voices we got, I don't think that's...
I don't think
we better stick to talk radio.
Yeah, okay. 202-588-0893. We're seriously looking for him. We're having a lot of fun as usual, but we are seriously concerned here. You know, I'm seriously concerned. I mean, we live here in a... You know, we know. Everybody keeps on saying we know D.C. is going to get hit again. you know,
it's just a matter of time.
Especially Dick Cheney.
Well, the United States is going to get hit.
The United States is going to get
DC
hit.
And D.C. is a very likely target. We are the capital.
And, you know, are we going to live with that? I mean, I just heard a thing coming in the radio, some people talking about extreme violence in Juarez. And the guy literally, Mexico, but I mean, these problem states are all over the place, literally saying, well, we just have to learn to live with it.
Well,
because
I don't
there's
think
nothing
we're
that
ever
can be done about the violence.
100% protection against terrorism, and I think it is it's people who think that it's 100% really just aren't.
You can't have an open society.
No,
and have
you
that
can't.
Period.
I mean, otherwise,
it's not worth the trade-off.
Right, you'd have
okay, but how far
society.
Do we go? Then becomes the question, and that's the real question too. Because if you go by the Dick Cheney thing, which I'm sure you don't, but you know the 1% idea. If there's a 1% chance, do whatever you have to do to prevent it.
Well, I'll tell you what. If it's a 1% chance of nuclear annihilation of American city, then I might be with Dick Cheney on a nuclear annihilation. If it's a 1% chance of some terrorist getting on a plane, nuclear. Nuclear. I'd consider it for nuclear, not for other things though.
But how do we know it's? You know, I mean, again, just having given the Dick Cheney example, how would we know that there's any truth behind it?
Right.
Well, we got it. That's the problem.
Yeah, perfect information.
I'll tell you this though: I'm willing to go on board a plane and have them do puffs of air on me, even if yes, they see my private parts through the machinery, whatever. I'm willing to give up that much privacy to go on a plane.
Are you Garland?
Well, sure.
Even ACLU, you're okay with that?
I can stand them laughing in front of my face. I don't know if I can take the shame, but, you know, I'll give it a shot.
But they're in a different room.
Actually, Dick Cheney's 1% was a bunch of crap. It wasn't really a 1% doctrine. It was, if you think about it, if somebody says 1%, what they really mean is that's an excuse to do anything I want, to attack anybody I want anytime. So I'll just say 1% because the reality is you could pick some country, you know, out in some tiny country in the middle of the South Pacific.
Okay.
Yeah. Iceland, 1% chance Iceland could attack us.
Before we pick on Iceland, I have really good news, guys.
Good, because Reykjavik is really cold this time.
Really good. Anita has the answers, and she's on the phone.
Terrific.
Anita, welcome to the Raucous Caucus Dialogue.
Please keep us out of Iceland. I don't want to invade.
Hello, Anita.
Anita, are you there?
Alan! Sorry, close enough, got the name.
I don't know. I mean, I just get these signs on the window, you know, and these little scratches, and we just take it.
Sorry about that. Go ahead,
Anita,
Alan.
If you're there, don't go away. And Alan? Yeah, okay, Alan, go ahead.
Save the world, Alan.
Mm-hmm. With who? With who? How? Okay. Let's accept your point, Alan. But who do we negotiate with?
Osama bin Laden. Do you think that would stop Osama bin Laden?
Okay, Alan. All right, Alan. All right. Hold, Alan. Alan. Hang on, Alan, because I appreciate your point of view. But I want to ask, you know, given the fact that we are an empire, given the fact that we have all these institutions and these structures in place, you know, I may agree with you idealistically, but in a practical sense, in a practical world, I mean, you know, Obama began by that sort of reaching out theme, and he's realized that ain't working. And Brad, you can say he didn't give it enough time or whatever, but, you know, how can we can't turn around what we've got that easily.
Alan,
so practically,
who do we negotiate with? Do you talk to Osama bin Laden? I mean,
yeah,
do you sit down and say... But who do we talk to, Alan? Give me names. Yeah, bin Laden said we had troops in Saudi Arabia And that's why he attacked us. But the government invited us in. Now, the government of Saudi Arabia, you could argue, well, that's a dictatorship. But every Arab country monarchy. Has a dictatorship. Well, monarchy, fine. It's still, there's the people don't choose it.
Here's the thing about it, though, and I've got to go
thank you, Alan. Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate your idealistic thinking. I really do.
I can go along with a lot of what he's saying. Part of it is this, and there's an old saying that always holds true. You can't talk your way out of something that you've behaved yourself into. In reality, to some extent, to extricate ourselves from the circumstances that we have put ourselves in is going to take time, and we're going to have to demonstrate through changes in behavior and changes in policy. We're going to have to win some friends back, but we're not going to be able. Now, we all say, everybody in the room says, we want to negotiate and talk and use diplomacy to fix everything. The reality is you can only talk but so much. We're going to have to demonstrate over the long term through our behaviors and changes in policies that we're not doing things the way we were. We're not going to be able to just talk our way out of it or act our way out of it overnight.
But
let me just finish this. It took a long time for us to create this. I mean, we can go back to 53 in Iran. We've done so many things over the course of time to really anger that part of the world that it's going to. The reality is, if I was them, I wouldn't trust us. You know, we throw their country back in 53, and then we come back, and then when they actually, which they had a right to do, take over the country from their 79, we say they're bad guys.
What you're saying, therefore, is we have to live with this situation for the next umpteen years because the empire, like I said, is not going to go away. Yeah. You can have some conversations saying we're going to change an attitude and change some policy, but it's not going to go away. You're not going to stop getting oil out of the Middle East.
Right.
Not in the short term, no.
We've got to change some policies
in the long term. You know, but so now you've got to. You know, this is more of a war than I think we're saying it is. I mean, yes, it is a strategy and it's asymmetrical warfare, but it is what you do against something this big, a military this big. You have to fight it asymmetrically, and that's what they're doing, and there's a unity in that approach. So we just live with it for the time being.
Well, a combination.
What you're saying.
No, I'm saying it's a combination. Of course, you're going to have to do something to deal. Al-Qaeda is quite a problem. And you can't just sit on your hands and say, well, let's just be nice.
We can't have troops in all these countries, Somalia, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Yemen.
Well, here's what I'm saying. To me, Al-Qaeda doesn't have, to put 100,000 troops to attack Al-Qaeda is not going to do any good because they don't have 100,000 troops. You have to use
black ops, special operations, small groups, and intelligence.
Mark,
and
don't forget, in the interest of diversity, I think the color of the ops should always be optional.
Camouflage ops, but that's an interesting point,
and I'm going to get to you in a second, Hassan. Don't go away, please. And Anita, if you were calling in, do call back or hang on. You know, that scares me in some ways even more, because when we get to a point in this country where our policy, and we've in some ways already gotten to this point, where our policy is black ops, where our policy is secret, where our policy is contractors, mercenaries, whatever you want to call them, they are in fact mercenaries, that's a pretty dark statement about the philosophy of the country as a whole.
But Al-Qaeda's black ops.
I think that America has always been, particularly militarily, a country of carrots and sticks. I mean, one of the smartest things we ever did in American history was the Marshall Program. I mean, here it is that we had, you know, horrible dictators, right, in the Nazis, and we destroyed them, and we nuked Japan. We turned around, and we gave a lot of money and helped build them up from nothing. What I'm saying is that Peace Corps-like things are as powerful or perhaps even more powerful and, frankly, cheaper than a lot of the military things.
Mark,
I
like the Marshall Plan, but I am kind of partial to the Emancipation Proclamation. Hey, don't we have to go to a PSA, I believe?
Doggone it is that time. Hassan, don't go away. We're going to get to you. We got a PSA. We got a little music. We'll be right back here with Terry D.
Kester. We got some dancing to do. We got
Garland
music.
Garland Nixon and Mark Levine. Don't go away. We'll be back in a moment.
Need to find out what's happening in the world of arts and activism? As a service to our listener community, WPFW has implemented the following on-air calendars. The Social Justice Calendar, which provides information on activist activities in the Washington, D.C. area, can be heard Monday through Friday at approximately 9:15 a.m. during community comment. the Jazz Music Calendar, which provides information and upcoming jazz performances, is heard Monday through Friday at 5:30 p.m. The Blues Music Calendar, which provides information and upcoming blues performances, is heard Monday through Friday at 12:30 p.m., Saturday at 11:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m., and Sunday at 3:30 p.m. The R&B and Oldies Music Calendar, which provides information on upcoming R&B and Oldies performances, is heard Saturday at 10:30 a.m. and 6:55 p.m. And the Hip Hop Music Calendar, which provides information on upcoming hip hop performances, is heard Monday through Friday at 10:30 p.m.
There's that. I wait for that magic light, that exciting light, that light that says on the air. That's beautiful. That's us. We're back on the Raucous Caucus. Terry D. Kester here with
Garland Nixon
and
Mark Levine.
It's a pleasure to be with you again, gentlemen, and happy new year again to you and to our listeners and to our callers, 202-588-0893.
They can't call in, Terry. All our lines are full.
Keep calling because we're going to talk fast, okay? I don't know if we still have Anita. Did we lose Anita entirely? Or yeah, okay. So next should be Hassan. Okay, Hassan, Terry Kester here with Mark Levine and Garland Nixon.
Welcome to 2010.
Welcome. Yeah,
hello,
welcome.
Hassan.
Hello. Uh-oh. Okay, Hassan, just one point, you know, and I want to hear number two, don't go away. In fact, that on other shows, that's done constantly, and in fact, on What's at Stake, I have brought on, and I always mispronounce it, many Imans. Is it Iman or Iman? I can never remember.
Iman.
Yeah, but I've brought on people of Muslim faith, people, Muslim experts from American University, et cetera, et cetera. We do bring those people on.
And I want to be clear. The vast majority of Muslims are clearly peaceful people,
of course.
It's America or Europe. I'm talking about a distinct radical Islamic ideology practiced by al-Qaeda. I in no way mean to impugn the vast majority of Muslims.
Okay.
I want to make that very clear.
And Hassan, you may be right that we don't do enough of that. Yeah. And I think you're right in this current situation. We should reignite, a bad choice of word there, but we should reinstitute bringing on more people of Muslim faith. Second point.
No, I don't think... I think Zionism...
All right, let him answer. Okay, let him answer.
I think Zionism is nationalism. I think there's Jewish nationalism. I think there's Arab nationalism. I think there's Afghani nationalism. I think, frankly, there's American, French, and British nationalism. Every country has a nationalism, a patriotism. That in itself is not radical. I think that when you go and you start killing innocents, that's radical.
Yeah, or...
Well,
it's radical in my mind, frankly, but yeah.
I'm a,
I don't think we're not, you know, we're not disagreeing. We're not disagreeing with you, Hassan. What we don't have.
We disagree that it's an inside job.
Yeah, no, well, inside job, yeah. But we're looking for that answer. We're looking for that solution.
Let me ask you this, Hassan. Let me ask you this. I assume, Hassan.
Hassan, hang on one second. I did do that actually a couple of years ago. I brought on Rabbi Lerner, and I brought on I forget who the Muslim gentleman was, and a Palestinian gentleman. I had them both on, and I tried. Well, I take it back. It wasn't Rabbi Lerner because he would have brought a more peaceful approach. But I brought on another rabbi. I brought them on together, side by side. I had to shut it down. I couldn't get them to agree on anything. I began to ask them the simple question, what would you want for your children? Don't give me anything about the past. What would you want for the future? What would you want for the next child born in Palestine or born in Israel? What kind of life would you want them to have? I couldn't get them past arguing. It was very, very frustrating.
I do think it's a mistake, though. Thank you very much, Hassan.
Yeah,
well, I do think it's a mistake, though, to tie everything to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Oh, yes.
I mean, if you look, again, Al-Qaeda is bombing mosques. Now, I don't think any self-respecting Muslim can support the bombing of mosques, just like no one can support the bombing of churches or synagogues. There is no reason to bomb a holy place with innocent people inside, period.
Except unless they're
shooting outside that mosque and, you know, shooting missiles from that mosque, they're innocent people. And I would like to see more people condemning things like that. And I would hope and I would expect Hassan to condemn that just like any other attack.
Well, there has to be that kind of condemnation. I mean, you know, you've got to, whether you've got Catholics and Protestants bombing each other in, you know, in Ireland, or Shiites and Sunnis, I mean, sooner or later, the leaders of those or the people have to say, look, you're killing my brother and sister. Well, I don't give a darn what religion, what cult, what sex, what color they are. You're killing my brother and sister. Sooner or later, we have to start saying that.
And
we're going to get to you in just a moment, Julian. Yeah, don't go away.
And I'll just say this. And again, and you know, I got to always throw this. We got to acknowledge that we're killing more than any of them. You know,
if you're counting
what we did in Iraq.
If you're going by
Saddam Hussein couldn't dream of killing a number of Muslims. But we got to get to Julian.
Yeah. Julian, you're on. Welcome. Thank you.
So let's bury him.
Wait a minute. Julian, keep calling, Julian. Good. Yes?
Yes.
Absolutely.
You're right.
Amen. Amen.
Very, very good point.
And we'd have more.
Which is why
there.
I would tax gasoline, although no one can do that politically.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right.
Good point. Or governments. We've
true. Yeah. Two good points.
Okay, go to point four and five. Go ahead. That's four.
This is four.
Yeah. Yeah, oxymoron. All right, Julian. Well, you know, that's an interesting point, Julian. We never do give the money to the people. We always give it to whoever's in power. Julian, Garland's got a few thoughts here, and we're going to have to get to our next caller. But, Julian, we are calling the State Department. We are going to get you a job. You know, expect Hillary to be calling you soon because you got some darn good ideas,
Julian brought up a point that we really haven't been talking about when he said befriending countries instead of individuals. Very important point, and I tell you why. What we do, you look at Egypt, you look at Jordan, we befriend governments that are oppressive, governments that are monarchies, governments that are dictatorships, etc., in the Middle East, okay, that are very oppressive to their people. And what happens is the people are angry. However, in that country, you cannot exhibit your anger towards the government or you'll end up, you know, shot or dragged away or whatever. So by proxy, they can exhibit their anger at the United States and put us behind it. So a big part of our problem, I'm not just saying there's so many of them, but a big part of our policy problem in the Middle East is befriending and supporting governments that are oppressive, not saying anything against a government that oppresses their people.
But you know why we do that?
Because they got oil.
Yes, and it's
and
much,
the government will give
and,
it to us.
And it's much more efficient.
Which is why
which is
I have
very
to
sad
say,
to say, but that's what
it's a, from but you a end business, up with a blown up
from a business point of view. Yep. It's much more efficient to go through a broker, a king, you know, somebody else. Say, look, I'll give you a few billions. Let me get your oil.
It's part
and you
of
end up with 9/11.
It's part of realpolitik. It's difficult. Are we going to be able to negotiate with the people of China rather than their government, which is a dictatorship? I don't know.
Yeah,
it's hard to do. But in general, absolutely, we should favor democracies over dictatorships, which is why I agree with four of Julian's points very strongly. But I don't think that we should, you know, give up a democracy to negotiate with Hamas, and I don't think we should negotiate with Osama bin Laden. I don't think it was right to negotiate with Hitler. I think there are certain groups that if we negotiate with Hamas, then they're people, they hate Hamas. Hamas is, of course, killing so many people, Fatah and other people in the streets, and then they overthrow Hamas, they hate us too. I think the point is that when our people are being somewhat reasonable, when they're democratically elected, then I think there's the people we can negotiate with. For example, the people in the West Bank, we certainly can negotiate with, but I think there's a point beyond which you cannot negotiate, and Al Qaeda, Hamas, the Nazis. There is a point beyond that.
Maybe there is. I mean, you know, I think we should negotiate with Hamas. Me but there too. there is a point where there's a line that we cross as a country or as a nation or in policy, and there's a line sometimes that our enemies cross. Once we cross that line, we're at each other's throats to such a degree that it's almost impossible to get anybody to talk, and that's really sad. Janice, you're on. Solve the problem for us, Janice, and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. Hello.
Hi, John.
Okay. 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 Right. Mm-hmm. So you believe it's Well, I hope not. I hope that I understand your point, and I certainly understand your historical and biblical reference. And it does come down, in my opinion, to economic inequality on a vast, vast scale, which drives this.
Always comes down to
so,
that.
So, Janice, right. Sure. I hope the prophecy is not necessary, but appreciate your call very much. Please call again. We got to get to John
and
here.
Thanks for listening to the Raucous Caucus.
Yeah, John, you're on the air. Talk to us. Give us a solution. Happy New Year to
Happy
you,
New Year,
sir.
John.
Okay.
I think you just killed the next two. We're going to have that for a long time.
John is attacking us because we don't have three
parties.
Well, go
parties. Ahead. Let's hear all three, though, John.
But we
three.
Haven't got two parties yeah. anyway. But yeah. go ahead, John. Uh-oh. Okay, John, I thank you very much for your call. I do want to point out to you, simply because when I first got into this, and it was with one of the radio talk show hosts that was also written a book about the 9/11 thing, I've heard about all this interior explosives, et cetera. I have worked in laboratories with compression tests on construction or on concrete. Trust me. What you're being fed about that is bull. If you compress concrete at about 4, you do test cylinders on every job, make sure the concrete is set right and has had correct drying time. When you put about 40,000 pounds of pressure on a cylinder about a foot high, 6 inches in diameter, you know what that concrete does? It explodes. And the same thing can happen whether you've got all the impact and the weight of the building, but we don't want to get into that whole 9/11 thing anyway. But trust me, the concrete explodes because the building is collapsing.
One of my favorite quotes is, any belief that is not founded in reason and logic will not be swayed by it. Therefore, let me say this. There are people that if God himself set foot on this earth and said Obama was born in Hawaii, they wouldn't believe it. And there are people who, if Osama bin Laden met with them and said, look, we blew it up. He didn't do it.
Right.
Don't give them the credit. Would say, we don't believe you. We blew it up.
And
so it's.
I actually see eerie parallels among the Arthurs and the 9/11ers.
No, there's the whole conspiracy there. You know, there's what that online book that everybody should read. That's called. I can't remember the name of it.
Well, you know, but I don't want to attack John completely because, I mean, John, where I think the mistake is when we call it a conspiracy as opposed to certain interests working in concert. That happens all the time. There certainly is a military-industrial complex that has definite goals in terms of this country and the result
and
of that.
And their profits from war.
Yes.
I mean, look at Halliburton.
Yes, and that.
And no one's disputing that. That's why I wish the 9/11 truthers would get off the specifics of what happened on September 11th and start talking about Halliburton profits and start talking about no-bid contracts and start talking about
the military-congressional-industrial complex and how it is, in fact, robbing, raping, and destroying our country.
And actually, they prefer... That we talk about things that can't be proven.
Exactly.
So we won't be able to watch them stealing every dime.
Which is why
got.
I've always believed the whole thing is part of COINTELPRO. That they're the ones who are trying to get people to talk about 9/11 because instead of talking about secret prisons and torture and all the other things that we do.
Tesfa, am I pronouncing that correctly? Good. Tesfa, welcome.
Happy New Year to you.
Mm-hmm. It was a great opportunity.
Good point.
It was a great opportunity.
Yeah, that was lost. We could have used a Marshall Plan then.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And in Rwanda and in Liberia.
not to mention every football game.
Community centers.
Yeah. All right, Tesfa. Tesfa, thank you. One for your passion. Two for your clarity. John, I hope you were still listening, because I think Tesfa has really hit it, as opposed to looking for the conspiracy theory, but looking at what is actually happening by the powers that be that are established that we are not challenging. Tesfa,
I don't know. Should we go to the MCI Center? Because I don't believe any of it. No, I'm just...
It's the Verizon Center anyway.
Come on. You're right.
Excuse me. And his points about what we did and didn't do.
No, it's a great opportunity. We could have used a Marshall Plan at that time, and we didn't do it.
Yeah. And the Iraqi sanctions were angering people. We didn't deal with that effectively. There were just so many things we didn't do effectively.
Rwanda had genocide in those years.
But it's a good thing to understand that, and I'm glad Tesfa pointed that out, because it shows, even though we were, quote, in sort of a time of peace, I mean, the Cold War was winding down, et cetera, it was almost impossible, or maybe it was impossible, to stop the monster, the military-industrial complex, to slow that down, to bring that back out of our knee-jerk policy. And so as soon as situations did occur where we again might have needed military weight, that whole big monster was there ready to pounce.
And everyone was saying the world changed after 9/11. The world didn't change after 9/11. A lot of things happened. We just felt, we felt the brunt
they
of a lot of things.
They came after us.
Right. There were a lot of people dying, a lot of different places, and bad things going on. A million Iraqi children dying of the sanctions. But we got a taste of the nasty.
I'm not convinced.
It was too many.
You know, but I will go so far to say it. I mean, basically, the military-industrial complex when 9/11 happened is saying thank you.
Oh, they were celebrating. Did you see?
To say that, but profits galore. We're still making profits. 140 tanks now for Iraq.
Right. I'll never forget Fahrenheit 9/11 when they were showing the meeting of the contractors for the Iraq
war. We're running out of time here.
Okay. And the one guy said, sure, it's bad for the country, but it's good for business.
That's right. Abdur, you're next. You're probably the last caller we're going to get on. Go ahead, Abdur. Yes, we can. Thank you for calling.
Happy New Year, Abdur.
Shalom alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Oh, we will.
Go ahead.
He was, but he didn't bomb or kill anybody in doing
but
so.
He certainly
I have no problem with radical ideas.
But let's hear where he's going. I want to hear where he's going here.
Okay.
Yes,
he was a radical. No question. He also said, don't go to the Constitutional Convention. Okay, so where is this leading us? Okay, Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, mm-hmm. Yes, we do.
Right. Well,
I hate to say it, Abdur, but I mean, this is to some degree what Obama said in his Nobel Prize speech. You know, that sometimes war is necessary for peace, and, you know, I understand your point, and I also understand your radicalism, and it's something we never talk about as a country, even though we call ourselves a Christian nation, and 75% of Americans claim to be Christians, and the instruction is to love your enemy. Well, we're not even considering that as an idea, let alone treating them with respect. And I've had this challenge before, and I think it's an interesting challenge, Garland and Mark, you know, is to treat your enemy with respect. I mean, understand, you know, what you've got to do to defend yourself. But if you don't show respect for your enemy, you know.
I actually think that's what President Obama has been trying to do now.
He tried to do, when
he went to Cairo. Now, he's been left, you know,
I was about to say that,
Mark. You know, George Bush left him with, to me, it's like he's like the guy that smacked the beehives really hard, and then the bees are following him. He said, okay, tag team, you're
right,
in.
Right, so
I'm not saying it's easy for President Obama, but I do think he's true. I think Abdur makes a very good point, certainly about Native Americans. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no excuse.
It was propaganda.
We white people came in and took over their country.
But I think
his broader
point is the people we are calling extremist and terrorist.
Well, let me tell you how
sense,
I define
in,
it.
In their culture and in their situation,
see,
they are
I
the radicals.
I don't think it's their culture. Radical is one thing, and maybe I shouldn't say radical Islam. Maybe I should say terrorist Islam, because to me, the difference is.
Or maybe you should just leave off the word Islam, because
I think it does, because I think it's an offshoot of a peaceful,
moderate
religion.
But we didn't call Timothy McVeigh radical Christian.
That's because we couldn't prove he was a Republican.
I don't think it was part of a movement. I don't think Timothy McVeigh led a movement.
Oh, man,
you haven't read the
Turner Diaries?
Well, there's a little bit of
part of a movement.
Okay, gentlemen.
We can call him radical Christians.
Calm down, gentlemen. Holy cow. These guys, I tell you that in 2010, there's been no improvement whatsoever.
It's all downhill from here.
But what do you expect?
Okay, gentlemen, we're running out of time. Mark, real quick, tell us how to get a hold of you if
we
want to.
Sure. In fact, Garland's setting up a Facebook page. You can Facebook me, Mark Levine, MarkLevine. You can go to my website, marklevineradio.com, and Garland.
You can Facebook me at my name, Garland Nixon, GARLANDNIXON, or just email me at garlandn@gmail.com. No death threats, please. Reserve those for Terry.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
Like Mark and I do.
Wait a minute. I'm Terry D. Kester. I have a Facebook page, too, but I don't respond to it, so don't even bother that. There's no picture on it.
And there's no face.
And you can't prove it's me anyway. But I do have an email address you can use now, because I've opened it up. I only have 2,057 emails on it. Feel free to join the crowd. And that's terrytdk@aol.com. Very simple, terrytdk@aol.com. I promise to actually look. If you just put on in reference to Raucous Caucus or WPFW, I will look.
And tell us
yours.
What you think about
tell
the
us what you think.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Some topic maybe you want to hear we haven't dealt with, bring it on.
Every Tuesday, 7 to 8 p.m.
Is there a topic we haven't dealt with?
If there is, our listeners will let us
know.
Yeah,
okay, right. Okay. We're running out of time. Next coming up is Brother Ah with the Jazz Collection, followed by Blackademics later on at 10 o'clock, and at 11 p.m., Late Night Jazz, and at 1 in the morning, if you're still up, Wednesday Overnight Jazz. How can it be Wednesday Overnight Jazz? Well, sorry, 1 a.m., Wednesday. Mm-hmm. I can figure this out pretty
quickly.
That's
right. And don't forget, every Tuesday at 7 p.m., more of the Raucous Caucus.
More of the Raucous Caucus, as we discover the solutions to the worlds that you help us find. This is Terry D. Kester with Mark Levine and Garland Nixon. Thanking you so much for joining us on WPFW 89.3 FM. Good night.
A conversation in which we all get a chance to speak, to listen, to be heard, and to collaborate to solve our problems. Participatory democracy is not just insider talk about or among winners.